When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And APB, American Protection Bureau, voted number one best on Long Island for all your security needs. Call 631-390-9050. That's 631-390-9050. APB.
You need a body shop? You need engine repair? Auto Excellence, Collision Specialists, 631-261-6420. That's 631-261-6420. Auto Excellence. Jimmy, I gotta take a dump.
What?
No, I mean I need a dumpster.
Well, for all those needs, you need to call Big V Dumpster Rental, Long Island, New York, 631-900-DUMP.
Elm Logistics, for all your logistic needs, call 631-299-3595. That's 631-299-3595. Elm Global Logistics, pride, performance, and partnerships.
The Monty and the Pharaoh Show is brought to you by...
Because wine is your second favorite four-letter word. California wine, New York attitude, good fucking wine.
Yeah.
Tired of that same old breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Same old tasting scrambled eggs, burger, that dinner steak, ribs, or pork chops? Why not add a little bit of spice or just a touch of heat to make the difference? Change that scrambled egg with a little bit of Johnny Fabulous's John Cena Sr.'s Million Dollar Jalapeno Hot Sauce. Great on burgers, steaks, chops, and those barbecued ribs.
And Nitro's Garage, for all your automotive needs, call 646-675-2349. That's 646-675-2349. For all your automotive needs, Nitro's Garage, ask for Jack.
Do you treat your dog as part of the family? Well, so do we. So why not celebrate your pup's birthday with the ultimate party box? Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Party Pup Info, and let us make your pup's party or any celebration perfection.
M&J Video Games and Collectibles. Sport and non-sport cards, wrestling items, autographed items. We buy, sell, and trade. M&J Video Games and Collectibles, located at 1049 Queen Street, Southington, Connecticut. Call us at 1-860-479-9223 or 860-93-GAMES. M&J, Video Games and Collectibles.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of Wrestling Remembered. I'm your host, Joe What a Day Lowry here. Happy Friday to everybody, as well as the people in the chat. Thank you so much for joining us. And this week, we're going to be taking a look back at the old territory days, as well as some old wrestling promotions and maybe a couple of surprises I have up my sleeve as well.
Nice.
But at first, with me, as always, are my esteemed colleagues. First up, he is my brother from another mother, the poet laureate of Monty and the Pharaoh, as well as the newly crowned champion of the 30. Here he is, Mr. Benny Scala, a.k.a. the player. Welcome, Benny.
Straight out of Playaville.
Congrats.
Yeah, it was a tough win last night. Great contest.
It was a good
recapture the championship.
Joe, I heard some people were watching the replay.
You know, a good champ is like a good hooker. They take on all comers.
All right. Next up, we have the president of Thursday Nights, my man from back home in lovely Massachusetts. He's loose, he's wild, and he's free. Let's welcome to the show, Mr. Phil DeCesare.
Wrestling fans around the corner and around the world, welcome to Wrestling Remembered.
There you go. All right, Phil, great to have you. And finally, he is the referee and producer of the hottest wrestling game show to hit the airwaves, the 30. Thanks to his Venmo surcharges, he may be the highest paid talent on this channel. He is the jack of all trades, master of none. Let's welcome to the show, Mr. Bruce, a.k.a. ESO. What's happening, ESO?
Thank you there, Joe. And I really appreciate all those Venmos. You know, it's I can't believe you guys fall for it every week.
I tell you, I see you get some new outfits, new duds on.
Yeah, I'm sure we can do that,
right? Nice threads.
He's on the take, but he's never fake.
You should see the new car too.
There you go. And again, thank you for everybody tuning in on the chat. Good stuff here. We're here to have some fun tonight. So say what you will in the chat. Be nice, be kind to one another and all that good stuff. Thank you so much for being here. All right. So this week we're talking about the old territory days, old pro wrestling companies and so forth. Now, I first became a fan in 81, and of course, all I thought everything was WWF because I was regulated to the Northeast, which is home to the World Wrestling Federation at the time, which is now the WWE. And I did come across a map here. I'm going to pull this map up real quickly. This is a map of the old territory days. There were a lot of territories. I had no clue there was this many territories. I mean, going all the way up into Canada, all the way to the Pacific Northwest, Southern California, throughout Texas, the Mid-Atlantic states and all that stuff. Have you guys ever seen a map like this before?
Yes, I've seen that before.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess the first question would be really to ask to go around the room is, when did you realize that there was other types of wrestling as opposed to what we grew up with? Whether it's a wrestling organization or a territory. Benny, go ahead. Lead us off.
Yeah, I can answer that. That happened the moment I opened my first wrestling magazine in 1968. And I saw a bunch of, in my mind, you know, I used to watch Lucha Libre, which was wrestling from the National Arena. It was Capital Wrestling, Vince Sr. in 1968. And I thought that the guys that I saw, Gorilla Monsoon, Tanaka, Bruno, right. Hans Mortier, all those guys, I thought that was it. And then I open up this magazine and I see Fritz Von Erich, and then I see Dick the Bruiser, the Crusher, Vern Gagne, and all. I'm like, where the hell do these guys wrestle? And, you know, once I started reading the magazines, I got a little bit more of a, you know, of an education of that, you know, that wrestling was all over the country with other men other than who I saw on Saturday night.
Right. Exactly. Phil, what was your first recollection that there was life outside the Northeast in the wrestling world?
Well, it's funny. Just as my interest started to grow, I started to peruse the magazine rack. And, of course, we had a great selection of the After Mags back in the day. And I'm talking early 1980s. And the bloody covers drew me to it. And the first image I saw was of Harley Race and Tommy Rich battling. And two guys I had never seen before. And, and that was enough to draw me in. And, you know, the thing about the magazines, and I think about Sports Review Wrestling particularly, was the fact that they gave us a history. They would have a back in time section where they would go through, a various decades. You know, they touch upon the 70s, the 60s, the 50s. So they always had a nod to the past, you know.
Who are you kidding? You love the apartment wrestling.
You read my mind, Joe, because up in the corner, before we had Divas, it was the apartment wrestling. and they got so close with those moves, wow. But not quite. I mean, and let me tell you.
Soft porn for $1.25. That was unbelievable.
Little buck and a quarter in the magazines.
Yeah, a buck and a quarter. Can you imagine? That's how much it used to be, and then it jumped to $1.50, and it's wow. Yep. And then from there, boom.
I was shocked. They always had the little picture, the colored picture in the upper right hand corner of the magazines, like, oh, who's wrestling this month? You know, it's like unbelievable. I don't know where they found these.
The
women.
Stories were so outlandish. Even like a 10-year-old, I knew. This is a work of fiction.
Who's making this shit up, really? And the covers look like a crime scene. A lot of gore.
Yeah.
ESO, I know you're a little bit younger than us. When did you get a first taste of knowing that there was more to wrestling than just the Northeast?
I actually don't remember knowing there wasn't more to it than the Northeast. Not knowing, because when I was a kid, my grandparents were down in Florida, and my grandfather always used to pick on Hulk Hogan and tell me how much better Ric Flair was than Hogan. So I really don't remember. But even as a youngster, I mean, I used to watch the Georgia Championship Wrestling when I was down in Florida, and got to watch a lot of the World Class Championship Wrestling on ESPN and the old AWA stuff. So I'm pretty familiar with a lot of it, but I really wish I would have gotten more familiar with like the Pacific Northwest stuff and the older Florida stuff. Yeah, that was a little before my time, but you know, those guys ended up turning the WWF into what the WWF became.
I recall when I first became a fan. I think I became a fan in June 81. July 81 was my first Garden experience. I want to say it was like right around that time I started buying the wrestling magazines, because I'd go with my father to the newsstand on Saturdays while he played his lottery. And I think you could make bets at the track back then, those off-track betting sites. And I remember seeing these magazines going, okay, I seen these guys on TV. And I used to get my history lessons from them. Now, this is cable didn't hit my neighborhood till 82. Yeah. So that first year in 81, going into 82 before we got cable, almost a year went by where I started knowing there was NWA, AWA. I didn't know about the Pacific Northwest. The only thing I recall going back then was when Buddy Rose came to town, they would show the old vignettes, and they would show him at a gymnasium in Portland, Oregon, saying, you know, he was the Northwest champion or whatever it was. I'm like, oh, so this guy's coming from somewhere. And then when cable came around, like I told you before, it was like Sonny King managed the Wild Samoans in Georgia. And then Captain Lou had them up here in the Northeast. And I did get my education. I learned about all the title reigns that Harley Race had. When Ric Flair won in 81, he won another title, beat Harley Race. And I think they had like two title changes within a week that they covered in one of the old magazines. And I was like, wow, this is really good. The only thing I hated about that the magazines back then, they were just a month or two behind with the news of the day and all that stuff. But hey, that was our internet back then. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. When I started putting this show together, I said, you know, it'd be a good idea to do some type of throwback. And lo and behold, now this is, I haven't talked to you guys about this. Benny, you started talking about wrestling magazines. Well, I put some decades together. Here's some wrestling magazines from 74. There you go. 1974. Wow. These are March of 84, The Wrestler, Wrestling Review, and Inside Wrestling. And, you know, those are the names you grew up with. I see Andre in there. I see the Briscoes.
Jack Briscoe, Vern Gagne. Yep, Pedro Vern was Gagne. Always on the covers. Yeah.
Obviously an old AWA title with Vern Gagne that he's got there. And Pedro and Billy Graham on the other side and so forth. Then fast forward a decade later, 84, Pro Wrestling Illustrated didn't pop up in the scene until 1979.
I have every single one of those.
Oh, yeah, same here. March of 84, ones. I picked March because it's March 1st.
Yeah.
I learned about Ric Flair and what Starrcade was reading in Sports Review Wrestling there with Ric Flair. I didn't know who Junkyard Dog was until I read Inside Wrestling. I think Tito Santana, one of the very rare cover boys, covers that he has was on The Wrestler here. Mm-hmm. It's just, that's how we grew up. And then, so we might be getting into your era now, 94, March of 94, here you go. The magazine started, the internet was, I don't think even the internet was even around in 94. The wrestling magazines were still holding on. Inside Wrestling, these are all March of 84, The Wrestler, of course, year in review type stuff. Cause don't forget March is really working on January, December's news and wrestling.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, from a decade later, 2004, I could only find this magazine cover. I do believe at one point The Wrestler and Inside Wrestling were two magazines in 1 week and flipped them over. You know, The Wrestler was on one side, that would go 60 pages. Then you'd have to turn it over on the other side, and that'd be the cover of Inside Wrestling. It
was that was at the end of them. Yeah, I believe.
Yeah, that was at the end of them. So, I mean, and this is, of course, in between you had Wrestling's Main Event.
George Napolitano.
I think there was another one launched. I think
there's something called New Wave Wrestling that was great it actually gave the shoot names of the wrestlers. It was really more of an insider's kind of magazine.
You missed from the 90s. You know, the most important one from the 90s with that phenomenal editor who became the the best wrestling writer ever.
Oh, there you go. You talking about after? Who are you talking about?
Russo there.
I only picked the March covers because it's March 1st. I mean, I could have put a whole bunch of – I mean, some of my favorite ones are like the PWI Year-End Awards, the one with Bob Backlund on the cover.
Yeah.
Him and Stifler in the cage.
I love those classic WWF ones. Yeah, those magazines were good.
Victory magazine.
But those were pre-Russo era.
You know, Bill Apter, he's a mentor of mine, and you know, I talked to him. I go, "What happened with you guys and the WWF and all that stuff?" And he said, "When by the time Hulk Hogan, it's in his book too. By the time Hulk Hogan became champion, they had already launched WWF magazine, and reporters and photographers were no longer allowed ringside. And believe it or not, true story. It's in Bill Apter's book, his Wrestling Fix. I didn't know it was broken on sale now.
Great book,
great read. Talks about the night that Hogan won." He actually had the first picture of Hulk Hogan outside the ring at a hotel. He got a call. He 2 days before, he said, Vince told me what's going to happen at Madison Square Garden. If you can come, I'd like you to not be there. But yeah, I know obviously you're not going to be able to get close enough. But if you are there, meet me at my hotel after the matches and I'll give you a picture with the belt. And he did that. Hogan was true to his word. So like, but Bill Apter couldn't even get ringside. It was amazing that Vince, all these wrestling magazines put these superstars on the map.
Yeah.
And, you know, just in one fell swoop, it was like, okay, no more photos. You can't be at ringside anymore. You don't get access to the wrestlers because Vince wandered into the land of publishing and had WWF Magazine and all those other things come out. So, you know, good stories in that book if you ever get a chance to read.
I want to meet him, and I don't know if he's coming to the big event. I don't know if Apter ever goes to those things, but I definitely want to meet him someday and thank him really.
If you look in the tri-state area, there's no doubt about he'll
for his contribution, you know. Yeah. And you know, speaking of the magazines, it's interesting. One of the articles years ago in the early 80s, George the Animal Steel was invited to the offices of the publishing company, and they were doing a photo shoot. They ended up doing a photo shoot, and he attacked one of the writers, Stu Sachs. In the pictures, and he had him in a headlock, and he's like ripping at his face. And as a kid, I saw that, and I thought, I can't believe they invited him there. This guy's crazy, you know.
You're right. Stu never showed his face.
He
had the cap over, you know, on the road with Stu Sachs, and he had.
Yeah.
There was all this kayfabe stuff. Brandy, Liz Mankiewicz, Hunter was great.
Liz Hunter, yeah.
Greg Brandy Peters, you know, one of the greatest moments.
The late Dan Shockett. Dan Shockett, and a real person at that, the heel writer. He was good.
Yeah, Dan Shockett was good. He died way too soon. But
yeah.
I hate to get off track here, but like, there's some great stories with this. And, you know, they had Bill had a belt made. By Reggie Parks, the office championship title that he takes to all his events with that wrestling. Championship Office Wrestling, whatever. Yeah, Champion of Office Wrestling. But the funny part is they would actually, the wrestlers would come into the offices and they would have a kayfabe match. And they would talk about it. And, you know, Bill usually won it. It was like this crazy. It was great. It was good stuff. It was good stuff.
You know, it's interesting, too. Ole Anderson made an appearance in office, too. And I think it might have been Craig Peters who wanted to test Ole's strength in arm wrestling. So there's a great picture, and I probably have it in one of the magazines. I think Craig Peters is actually standing up and straining to move Ole's arm. Ole's just sitting there looking at the camera like, is he serious? Can he actually move my arm? No chance. Yeah.
I remember back in 2016, Bill Apter went to a reunion of Western Publishing. It was all the guys there. Stu, obviously not Dan Chalk,
but yeah. Matt Brock, maybe? Matt Brock, yeah.
He's another guy, but they all got together and they put a video together saying, "Hey, Joe, what a day." And I thought I was in Paris. I was like,
dude, that's incredible.
And they called me on the cell phone. Bill was driving. They were all going to dinner and they passed the phone around saying, "Thanks for buying those magazines back then."
I bought so many of them, I better get one of these. I'm telling you.
I was like a kid in a candy store. I was like, oh my God.
I love it.
You know, you read these names growing up, and it's like now you're talking to them, and now you're seeing them, and it's like it just blew my mind. So
they got me into reading, too, I mean, which is amazing, you know? It was just, it was, yeah. Then on.
Believe it or not, it made you a fan, and it educated you on the sport.
Yeah.
Geographic locations, I could tell you where the Meadowlands Arena was. I can tell you where the Sportatorium was. It was a geographical thing. Yeah.
And you know what? And as we segue into territories and the geography of it, the buildings had a unique charm in their own right. They were not corporately made or named at this point, like all the other sports arenas and stadiums now in professional sports. They had a unique charm. They had this, you know, it was very personal. You know, each area had their main arena with its, you know, with a unique name too. Certainly a very unique. Is there another San Francisco Cow Palace anywhere now? I mean, what is it now? It's not even there, I don't think.
I'll never forget being at the dinner table and talking to my family about, the Cow Palace. And like, Joey, what are you talking about? I'd be like, it's in San Francisco. Like I was there, you know?
It was a gay rodeo.
Yeah, so I want to wake you up for a second. What's some of the arenas that you've been to outside of the Northeast, or have you been anywhere?
Well, I've been to the Cow Palace. I went to college in San Francisco.
There you go.
I've been there quite a few times.
That's incredible.
I went to the big arena in Phoenix where the Suns play. They used to call it the Purple Palace.
With Phoenix.
Then, obviously Madison Square Garden, the old Meadowlands, Barclays Center. I've been to arenas all over and seen wrestling at a lot of them, too. So my last wrestling show that I got to see was Madison Square Garden. And it's kind of funny how they used to pack people in a lot tighter than they do now, especially when it comes to ringside. It's a totally different experience. So
my first non-Northeast matches I went to was I had just joined the Navy. I was stationed in Norfolk, Virginia before we were going on a med cruise. And the NWA came to town at the Norfolk Scope. And I saw Ric Flair take on Lex Luger. I was ringside. And I loved it. I could hear them bouncing off the ropes. They had the tight ropes back then. The NWA rings were so much different than the WWE rings.
You're exactly right. And that's something else.
And when they went off the ropes, you can hear the ropes stretch. And it's like, oh my God, like this, you know, as a fan growing up, you're like, you always dreamt of seeing that type of ring outside of the Northeast. And I finally got to it when I was 18. So that was kind of neat right there. It's great memories when you're talking about you go right back to that timeline, right?
Yeah.
Right. Benny, have you been outside the Northeast for wrestling?
I mean, I went in the Northeast, though. I went to the now defunct Island Garden in West Hempstead, New York. That was where I went to my first show. I also went to Sunnyside Garden, which was a very significant arena in the Northeast in the 60s and the 70s. But I've been to the Amalie here in Tampa. I've been to the Target Center in Minneapolis. I've been to the Scope as well in Norfolk. So I've been to a few.
I remember when WWF started going national, they always filmed in Minneapolis. They had an arena there in Minneapolis, and I was always shocked that they were over there. That was like AWA country. And this is like right when Hogan won the title. I want to say between 85 and 87. They were going to Minneapolis a lot. I think it was probably a show.
Well, Vern was still running, albeit not very well.
Yeah, I mean, to me, maybe it was a shot to Vern saying, look, we could do things better. But, you know, Vern was the very last organization to clear the way, I guess. And, you know, just talking about Ole Anderson real quick, I found a picture of him online today going back to, I want to say this is like 87 or 88.
Oh, wow.
With Ted Turner.
Yeah.
And Ted Turner, when he bought, obviously, the NWA World Championship Wrestling, he didn't know much about wrestling. So he had a close knit of people, wrestlers, that he wanted to confide in, and Ole was one of them. But Ole was still that old school guy, and you know, they said the industry kind of pushed Ole aside because Turner wanted Vince McMahon type wrestling, and Ole was steadfast on not doing it. Eventually Ole came around because, you know, he worked at the power plants and all that stuff. But that picture, if you look at it again, it just, you can just see that, you know, Ole's got his eyes on something else, and Turner is all about, you know, making money and all that stuff. So I don't know. I just thought it was a different picture to look at. And ironically, and all that, I did not know that Ole Anderson was stabbed in 1976.
Yep.
Yeah, in South Carolina, I believe. Ring.
Yeah, I just read this today, and I was like, wow, Ole and Gene were assaulted by a 79-year-old man, of all things, with a knife.
Crazy.
People took their wrestling seriously back then.
Yeah, they said that. I think the cop in the article says, yeah, fans were already heated being at a wrestling event. So
I remember, yeah.
Yes, I mean, sir, I remember. Have you ever assaulted a wrestler?
Me? No, and I'm not about to start. Most of the ones I've met have been rather large and could probably kill me.
Come on, you didn't swipe Morocco's blood off his head when he was coming out of the cage match with the guard in 81, the guy did?
My brother did. Crazy, my brother, man, threw a lit cigarette at Nikolai Volkov at the National Coliseum.
Oh, poor Nikolai.
Next thing I know, he was like, this is about 1976.
Yeah.
Next thing I know, a couple of security guards grab him, and I'm thinking, oh, crap. Like, what do I do now? Like, how do I even find him? And 30 seconds later, he was behind me. So I don't know how he got away somehow. But
I read a story. Blackjack Mulligan got stabbed at the Boston Garden years ago.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Sliced up the leg. Yeah.
Yeah.
With an infected blade, no less.
Yep. Well, yeah.
And pig's blood. It was dipped in pig's blood or something. Well, he got septic and everything.
Any of you guys remember Angelo Savoldi?
Yes.
Like, he's like way back in the day. But Angelo Savoldi,
Parsippany, New Jersey,
was a phenomenal junior heavyweight. And back in the 1950s, he actually won the NWA, the junior heavyweight championship, about four or five times. But
yeah,
he was wrestling Danny Hodge.
Oh, wow.
Another wrestling legend in Oklahoma City, I think, or Tulsa.
Yeah.
And he got stabbed. They needed about 200 stitches.
Yeah.
And it was the person who stabbed him was Danny Hodge's father.
Oh, geez.
Wow. Who was not smartened up, I'm sure, right?
Right. I mean,
wow.
So this is like people took this shit real serious back then.
Bad enough he had to wrestle Danny Hodge, who could destroy anybody, but then have Danny Hodge's dad knife him.
Oh, my
good Lord. Like
200 stitches. It was crazy.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
Maria Davis says she touched SD Jones on his shoulder once. Now, he had a stab wound in the back of his shoulder, didn't he?
Remember that? It looked like a giant bullet.
Was that you?
Yeah, big giant bullet. Yeah. You could pour a glass of water in that thing. I mean.
And Jay Will says that Sonny King, Blackjack Mulligan, and Pedro Morales were also stabbed. Wow. Jeez. My God. And back in Joe Myers, Baby Cakes chiming in. Back in Brockton, they call that getting shanked.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Hey, did you guys know what happened 37 years ago this week?
Well, let me do the math for a minute here.
87?
Yep.
This week.
37 years ago.
That wasn't Andre winning the title on primetime. That
Come
was
on,
88.
ESO, you should know this. 37 it years was, ago, what happened?
87, it would have to have been something with Andre going into WrestleMania 3.
WrestleMania 3, somehow.
There you go. It was the infamous contract.
Oh, yeah.
With my favorite commissioner, Jack Tunney.
Yep.
I couldn't even tell you. Blackjack Lanz is back there. I don't know who the other two guys are behind Jack Tunney, but the other guy.
That was a great. He called Andre Mr. Rusimoff, which was, you know.
Legit. Oh, wow.
But then he called Hogan Mr. Hogan instead of Mr. Bollea.
Yeah. And I think this is the press conference too that they said that they wanted an extra large belt made so when Hogan lost it to Andre would be able to strap the title around his waist. So, you know, they kind of really worked that up there. I almost want to say they had one made. I'm not sure about that, but I think someone said
right. They must have expanded.
Bobby
Heenan, for sure.
Bobby Heenan yelled at Hogan saying, you better have a bigger belt made, or ask Jack Tunney to have the belt made bigger because Andre was going to win it and so forth. But we eventually knew what happened. Hey, guess what happened 10 years ago this week?
I got to do more math.
It's 2014, if you really
know. I know.
I wasn't watching wrestling at that point. So
February 2014.
I started coming back around again because my kids were back in.
Was it something with Brian Danielson?
Nope. It was 10 years ago this week that Stephanie introduced us to the WWE Network.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Can you imagine that? 10 years ago. Unbelievable. I remember they were at some expo. I want to say like a month or two before where they had, it was a technology expo or something, and they came out and they were talking about streaming and, you know, don't forget Netflix and all that was relatively new as well. But they was like, yep, WWE is going to be going, because where I was, where I lived at Comcast, Phil, I don't know if you had it.
What's that? Yeah.
They had the WWE had some type of on-demand service with Comcast or Xfinity back then, where you could look at old matches.
WWE 24/7 or something, maybe it was called. Yeah.
It was hosted by me and Gene, and like every month new stuff was added. And I think they used that as a measuring tool to see if they can get the people to buy for $9.99.
I recall, yeah.
You know, and off and running. Here we are 10 years later. And I just did an interview with Stewie from the UK this morning, and they still have bits and pieces of the WWE Network over there. But I think come the first of the year, that's going to be over for us here in the States. The WWE Network's going to seize.
Can I tell you, hold on to your tapes, man. Hold on to them, you know, if you've made them, because, you know, efforts to rewrite history will be made, I think, whitewash and rewrite history. So have those tapes. And if you don't have the tapes, keep it in your memory, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it was a lot different back then.
Yep.
I mean, everything's shaped. Think of it. Even WrestleMania, you cannot get an original copy of the original WrestleMania because of the it's the music, and it was something else with the announcers. Was it something with Ventura or something?
Probably, yeah. He sued, and they decided to take him out of all the broadcasts, which is just
so. Him out of the broadcast. Oh my god!
So it's something like that. So you can't even find the original WrestleMania. So it's crazy. So it's been
collectible.
It's been getting rewritten for a long time, but. Yeah, you're not going to see a lot of faces in a new version of the WWE Network.
I used to have a cousin who actually taped The War to Settle the Score on VCR.
I did so too. I might have it somewhere. Of course,
that was kind of neat watching.
Absolutely,
that.
You
know,
yeah.
Alan Hunter and those guys. Of course, that took place 84. In March, right?
February
of 84, I think, or 85, somewhere on there.
Yeah, 84, 85 was the WrestleMania. 84 was the Settle the Score.
Yep. So that was good. And I was trying to find some footage today, looking back on Roddy Piper turning Lou Albano into a good guy with the smashing of the album.
I love that.
Black. It was like, oh my goodness. Like, you just can't, you know, those days, everything was just growing at such, I think we went through like a serious growth spurt with the WWE back in 84, 85. When Hogan won the title, it was like everything was just on jet fuel. It was just insane. You just lost. It became the circus after that, I think, 87, 88, things like that. You guys remember those days, obviously?
I mean, Hulkamania was highly contagious.
It was contagious. Yes,
I caught it, man. I caught it. Absolutely.
Yeah,
Vince robbed every territory of all their major stars. When you think about it, took Valentine, Piper out of Mid-Atlantic. He took Hogan from the AWA. Hogan, Jesse, Bobby Heenan, Mean Gene.
Yeah,
Got the Junkyard Dog and Duggan from Mid-South.
JYD. Speaking of dogs, Maria wants to see your dog, Benny.
Oh, here's Bree.
look at that.
Bree is awesome.
What's the dog's name?
Bree. B-R-I-I.
B-R-I-I. Ooh.
Brianne.
Brianne. Oh, nice. Look at that.
And she contributes to the discussion. I love it. She punctuates points very well.
She's a huge fan.
I know. You know, she's a voice of reason sometimes.
Yeah, she listens to at least four or five podcasts a week. So
you got to put the dog away now because ESO is going to give you like 10 extra points now. I can feel that coming.
Want to go back-to-back next week.
Back-to-back.
Bree could be the new RCA dog.
She really looks cool. Like it, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, one of those old-fashioned record players and have to sit down.
Yeah.
So real quick, going back to that map, there's a section up here. I didn't know there was wrestling up in Halifax.
Oh, the Dupree, Emile Dupree.
And Grand Pro Wrestling.
Yep, sure.
I knew that existed. Who wrestled up there?
Was that the Maritimes? Was that the other name for it?
Way up there, yeah.
I think so. Emile Dupree and a lot of talent going in and out of there.
I know Lanny Poffo wrestled there.
Yeah, Randy, I think too. Yeah.
Yesterday was Leap and Landing Day. I forgot about that.
That's right. Leap year.
Leaping Lanny Day. Unbelievable. Rest in peace. Unbelievable. Looks like Bree's got some fans in the comments. They can hear her barking. Yeah, yeah. She's being stubborn.
Well, it took a little bit for me to trap her.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, but she's good now.
Does it do any tricks or anything like that? Or
no.
Unbelievable. All right. So where else? Where are we? All right. So
Sweet Pooch.
Back to the map real quick. There's another area. Vancouver, I do Pacific Northwest. The World Wrestling Association.
Is that Peoria, Illinois? No.
This is Southern California, the World Wrestling Association.
Okay.
I was always confused because I saw you see pictures of Pedro with the title in that era back in the old arenas out there. I was always confused. Were they allowed to travel as the champion of a certain, say Pedro as WWF champion would travel to California to be recognized as a champion back then?
When they were under the NWA, they went back and forth under the NWA. When they were affiliated, yes, they did. Right. But otherwise, I don't think so. But okay. Don't forget, they came back. Vince had come back in the late 70s with the he had reaffiliated with them for that short time there.
Okay.
With Mike LaBelle in the office out there, I think. I think they might have had some relationship.
And I think when Fred Blassie came to the East Coast in the early 70s when he was still a wrestler.
Yeah.
They billed him as the Pacific Coast champion.
That's what I remember back then. Always at the Cow Palace.
Bruno went to. We talked about the Cow Palace. I think it was in 1967. Bruno went to wrestle Ray Stevens.
That's right, and he lost by count out, didn't he, Benny? Well, I don't know. Yeah,
Stevens won the first. They split the falls first two, and then Stevens won the third fall by count out, and there was a big controversy. But I mean, that's San Francisco back in the late 60s, early 70s was a really hot territory. I mean, so many of them were on fire back then.
Yeah.
When I was researching these magazines too, I did come across, I thought it was in the 74 edition, but there was one where Bruno Sammartino was wrestling an NWA star. The name is slipping by me now, but it made the cover. And I was like, wow, that's like, you know, this was WWF back then, you know, but they're lending Bruno out to go elsewhere, which was shocking to me because I thought the reason that Vince McMahon Sr. Seceded from the NWA to start the Worldwide Wrestling Federation was to get away from that. But obviously, they still lent out talent throughout the U.S.
He went to Houston, I believe. I don't know.
Yeah, he would frequently wrestle in Houston.
Yeah.
That's really funny. You said like both the WWWF and the AWA were formed because of Lou Thesz. So when Buddy Rogers lost the NWA championship to Lou Thesz, I think it was in 1963. That's when the WWF was formed.
Right.
And they, you know, Buddy won this fictional tournament from in the finals from Antonio Rocca. Guess where? Rio
de Janeiro. Rio, baby.
Oh, wow.
Blame it on Rio. And then
her name is Rio. AWA. She dances in the sand.
Grand squared right there. All right.
Right. And then Vern formed the AWA in 1960 for the same reason. They wouldn't give him the belt.
Right.
You know, he was chasing Thesz.
What, July of 82, it wasn't until I bought my wrestling magazine that I found out that Bob Backlund fought Ric Flair, whose title versus title ended
up on me.
Out or something like that. I didn't know that was taking place. I was shocked to see it, but it wasn't reported on WWF TV. It was reported on Georgia Championship Wrestling because you had the interview with both of them with Gordon Solie, but you didn't hear anything about like that up in the Northeast.
And, no, not at all.
Superstar Billy Graham wrestled Harley Race, I think, in Miami.
Yep. And I think one of the old Madison Square Garden shows, Harley Race came to town wearing the 10 pounds of gold and being introduced as an NWA champion, which... You know, I thought that was taboo back then. You know, when Vinnie Jr. took over, that was not going to happen again. But, you know, maybe there was two different philosophies there.
They would frequently, like Ric Flair came to Madison Square Garden in 76.
Yep.
I think you had Kerry Von Erich.
Yeah.
You know, the guys from the NWA, they would do shots in New York. Even Vern would do an occasional shot in New York.
Yeah.
And John Will just chimed in. Paul Bosch was a name I used to see in wrestling magazines. He was a promoter down in Texas, right?
Houston. Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
That wasn't really a territory. It was more of a promotion.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Booking office.
Correct. I mean, there were so many of those booking offices because obviously wrestlers had to go, you know, when they traveled, they had to check in somewhere or whoever was doing the booking. Like, real quick, I don't mean to backtrack, but going back, just take the Northeast WWF. You know, you go on Facebook and you go on social media and they're always posting these old cards from high school gymnasiums. You know, it's like, who did the booking for them back then to put Andre the Giant versus like Hulk Hogan in a high school gymnasium from like 1981? Like, who does that? Like, who is in charge of all that? You know, do you guys ever question that?
What, you know, I think they just had to kind of practice their craft in the smaller clubs. Yeah. I mean, not everyone can get to the major arenas, you know, and back then it was
Jimmy
a different
world. When he was on my podcast, he said that's how you that's how the younger wrestlers learn too, was on these spot shows.
Own the craft,
They put him against another prelim guy. They'd wrestle like a, you know, 20-minute draw. It was great practice for him.
Yeah, and then that takes me back to the old, you know, turning on Saturday morning wrestling. Always after the ring announcer did his instructions and the two guys first went at it, Vince and Pat Patterson or Bruno were quiet for like 3 minutes because Howard Finkel had to tell you who's coming to town when. It was either Lowell, it was either Cape Cod, it was either the Garden.
Yep, you know, Worcester Memorial Auditorium. Yeah.
Right, I'm going to ask you guys, because you're from that area, where was Jack Witchie?
Jack Witzke?
Oh, that arena, yes. That was, Fall River?
Island? Yeah, that was down New Bedford.
It was down New Bedford, Fall River area. Down it was close to Rhode Island, yeah.
I mean, because I've seen a lot of cards that were advertised from there.
Yeah.
That's like the old ECW used to go to the Armory down there in Fall River. They were big down there.
Yeah. I think that arena held only about 700 people too. Yeah, so it was an intimate venue. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Jack Witchie.
I think they had a lot of high school events there too, for like tournaments and stuff like that. So, you know, cause back then the high school gymnasiums aren't built like they are today. They were much smaller. So to have
the roll up bleachers and everything. Yeah. Yeah. All
that stuff. I'll never forget when, my high school, North Quincy High School, where me and Missy Beefcake went to high school together.
You didn't hide under the bleachers together, did you?
My sophomore year, my sophomore year, they did a gym over, and it rivaled most college gymnasiums. And the first thing I thought of was like, they need to have a wrestling show here.
Yeah,
it housed three regulation sized basketball courts. So I mean, for a high school gym, that was pretty big. So I was just like, that was my first thought when I saw all the stands and everything being put up. I'm like, they need to put a wrestling show here.
It's a great first thought. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But how many of us have great memories of going to a spot show at like one of these small high schools? And, you know, that like the whole thing with the territories, though. And let me just really quick find my notes here. Like, if you were growing up in Florida in the 70s, they had Orlando every Sunday, West Palm Beach every Monday, Tampa on Tuesday, Miami Wednesday, Jacksonville Thursday, Fort Lauderdale on Friday, and then they did spot shows on Saturday. So, I mean, if you were really a dedicated fan.
Well, Memphis was like that too, right?
Memphis did the Mid-South Coliseum every Monday night, correct?
Yeah, it was like every week. I mean, I don't even know how you do TV for that, because by the time, you know, TV rolls, I don't know how they did it back then. Obviously, they had studio television, but storylines must be going crazy back then with that type of audience going every week. Sportatorium in Texas, same thing. They wrestled almost like once a week down there too as well.
But if you were a dedicated fan, like just use Florida for an example, you could catch maybe, you know, two or three cards a week. You're talking like going to 100 wrestling events a year.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, I might get to one or two.
Yeah,
because they don't, you know, they travel all. It's not local anymore. It's national.
Yep, I believe it was affordable back then as well.
Very.
And you know, what they used to call those wrestling hotbeds, right? When you could sell out a place every 7 days over and over, they kept going. Like I always say, going back to the well. They did it all the time.
Yeah.
I was shocked even reading those. I mean, WWE didn't do that. They were more or less regulated to the Northeast, so there were only X amount of arenas you can go to. The Garden.
Boston Saturday nights at the Garden. Worcester Thursday nights, you know.
It was always,
did they run the Boston Garden monthly or more than that?
First Saturday of every month.
Okay, yep. And, you know, the MSG was every 3 weeks.
Worcester Odd was like second or third Thursday every month, too, and very consistent.
Allentown, Poughkeepsie.
The Spectrum. Yeah. They used to go to the Spectrum.
The White Plains.
Again, growing up in the New York area, like I could have gone to the Garden every month, the Coliseum every month, and probably caught a couple of shows like in White Plains, and maybe if they did a spot show. They used to use the Comac Arena out east on Long Island. But, I mean, that's what I always say, like, are we better off as fans now? Or I think we were way better off then.
I was just thinking that there's no question.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely no question.
Yeah,
no question.
You watch TV to keep up with the storylines, but to see them in action.
It's not personal anymore.
No, it's homogenous. It's so corporate. Inorganic.
The heart of many of these territories was a great studio wrestling show, like Memphis with Lance Russell. You had Mid-South was JR, Jim Ross. You had Bob Caudle in Mid-Atlantic. Tampa was, the Dean, Gordon Soley. I mean, it was just, that built the storylines so that they could sell out the arenas every week.
Wow. Just getting word here from Mike Monty. Paul Puget-Vachon has passed away.
Oh, bummer.
Oh, no.
You know what? I would love to have seen. He lived up in Vermont, up in New England for a while, I think, right in the Canadian United States border up there. Right.
That's scary because we had George Shire on Dan and Benny in the Ring on Tuesday.
Yeah.
We were chatting about Ole and Virgil. Well, no, mostly about Ole. But, George was recounting all the guys that he was friends with, from the, his days in Minnesota. And he mentioned Paul. And he's, there's so few of them that are still with us. And he said, but Paul's not doing that well. And a couple of days later.
Yeah. And here's a picture of Paul and Luna.
The Butcher of Vachon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Breaking news right here, folks.
He was really big in Andre's life, too. He was really, I think he was like an interpreter for Andre back in the day, too. Really. And a frequent opponent of Andre when he first came to the United States when he was working. Doing shots for Vern. So he was really, And again, we came to know him really, as enhancement later in life, as maybe lower card or upper lower card talent.
He was the Swede Hansen.
Yeah.
He was a promoter and a wrestler out of Quebec. He has died, passed away 86 years old.
Yeah. God bless. 86. Good run.
Wow. Unbelievable. There's your third one. There you go. Ole, Virgil, and now him. I knew it comes in threes.
Yeah.
Maybe Richard Lewis would have capped it, but
I hate to say it, but there's so many of these guys that are like right in that range, that age range, like the early 80s, Ken Patera, I think, just turned 80. You got Jimmy Valiant, I think, will be 82. Von Raschke is in his early to mid 80s. So many of these guys. Lars Anderson, Larry Heinemini, I think is 85.
I heard that. Yeah.
So are you saying we should start a pool to see who the next one is?
No, I'm not saying.
You taking that PSO?
I'm saying we should have a new reality TV show with all of these oldsters together in one giant home.
Didn't they have them
tell stories?
Didn't they do that?
They kind of did, but
House,
we make it far more interesting with more interesting people, I think, too.
That's too bad. Paul Vachon, he was a character. He's another one that I grew up with only seeing in wrestling magazines. I think he had a brief stint in the WWF when at least one wrestler from every territory came through at one point, but I never really saw him. I never saw him in the WWF, even though I know he was here.
Yeah, Paul Vachon wrestled in the East Coast for a while.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
I remember in AWA, he was always on ESPN AWA shows and things like that. So
that's big guy too, much bigger than Maurice, than Mad Dog, is his little brother,
Yep. So, wow. So him and Luna together again. Jeez. Unbelievable.
Whole family.
And the dog. Yeah.
You know, it stinks though. He's 86 and you would have thought we would have lost a lot during COVID. And to survive COVID and all that now, and just to, come out on the other side and then pass away, it's kind of sad, You think these guys are immortal. You think, because they're so time-stamped in our minds. You think of Hulk Hogan, you think of 1984, you think of Bob Backlund, you think of 1978, but they do not look like that anymore. And it's sad, Iso, who do you think's going next?
I don't want to
think about it. Oh, no death pools. Oh, my Lord.
I don't want to think about it. There's a lot of legends out there that are getting up there. I mean, you think of, like, Abdullah the Butcher. I mean, the guy put his body through so much, and he's still kicking there.
Abdullah's like the Keith Richards of wrestling. Like, how is he still alive?
I don't know. He's sticking his quarters in his forehead.
He keeps coming down for breakfast, man. He does, I'll tell you.
I heard that for the first time a couple of years ago. So and so's coming down for breakfast.
That's a Howie Carr thing. He says, so and so's not coming down for breakfast. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. That's too bad. So
86, not bad, man.
Jay Will said Butch Reed and Tiny Lister died COVID related issues. Was that a while ago? Yeah, that was a while ago, right?
Yeah.
You're
saying, let's talk about life. That's a good idea. Yeah, let's get kind of depressing.
There you go.
My goodness. All right, folks, I think we're going to wrap up on time this week. What do you think?
Oh, man. I'm actually stimulated. I could go for a while.
We should do a part two of this because we really didn't get into the territory.
Yeah.
A whole lot.
Well, all right. So we got a couple minutes. Let me see here. Let's
First of all, I have to compliment you, Joe, on the beginning of the show with that distinctive Madison Square Garden bell ringing. Yes, no other ringside bell sounds like the MSG bell, okay? Oh, yeah. Something special about it. You could ring 10 bells, and I would know which one is the MSG bell.
I think the crowd has a lot to do with that as well.
Yeah, and you know, absolutely, in the acoustics of the garden, too. Then you think, say, in Texas with World Class, that bell has a certain clang or clank to it, too.
I don't think that was bell. I think it might have been a cow bell or something.
It was a cow. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, or a horseshoe or something. I don't know what it was, but it had a distinctive sound anyway, you know?
Yeah, the old garden had the old Boston garden had a distinct sound.
It definitely did, too.
They would
put
a microphone on the table and ring the bell.
Yeah. And, you know, the title belts, if we get into it now. You know, you think about it, Georgia, you know, and in the Southern Territories almost always had a rebel flag as part of their belt somewhere on the title, you know. And you look at Southwest Championship Wrestling, too, the cowhide belts, which, again, very unique and distinct to that area, too.
Very symbolic of the territory.
Yeah. So, again, that artistic, you know, that regional artistic characteristic now is gone, you know.
Definitely.
And I mean, you could tell a title from a distance, just, you know, I mean, they were just so distinct and different, you know.
Maria Davis wants more cowbell.
Always more cowbell, baby.
Always more cowbell. All right, let's cover one more territory. Let me see. Pick one, guys. What do you guys think? What's an obscure one that we haven't really talked about?
Oh, Stampede?
Phoenix, Arizona.
What's that?
That's really obscure.
Western States Wrestling Alliance.
Is that what's in Phoenix?
That's what's in Arizona.
I think that was the Albuquerque territory.
Who in God's name wrestled over there? It was like 100 degrees.
What's his name? Billy Anderson, maybe? That's about it, I think, right? Is that name sound familiar? Not related to Ole or Arn or Gene or Lars or...
You got to think. These CW. Guys hit these territories going to and from the coast. They had to have.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to Phoenix, you might as well go all the way to San Francisco after that.
And think about it. Who wants to do a road trip in the desert, you know? I mean, really, hundreds of miles of cactus? Come on.
Look at these states over here that have nothing. Nothing. Montana, they don't have anything. Like these states here, all in white, nothing. No representation whatsoever. Was it just not too... Was it not no fans out there? Was it too rural? I don't know.
Flyover country, man. I don't know.
Like a Montana or an Idaho. Like you probably didn't have much wrestling.
Anything.
There.
Nebraska.
I would have thought Las Vegas would have had something, but Nevada's blank.
Yeah, nothing there either.
AWA did eventually come to Las Vegas.
And the San Francisco territory had Las Vegas as part of their loop.
Okay.
Back in the day.
Yeah, that was an AWA. Yeah, it's always been.
And then the AWA annexed them, yes.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right, folks, I think that's going to do it for us here. We're going to finish on time, so Mike will be happy about that.
All right.
I want to thank everybody for joining us in the chat and so forth. We'll definitely have to recapture. We'll do more research on the pro wrestling outfits as well as territories back in the day. But everybody in the chat, feel free to send us your recommendations on what you'd like to hear and talk about with Wrestling Remembered. It's all about going back in time. We can cover all the way up to when ESO was born, right? We can do that.
Joe, let's quick quiz question for the chat. Non-wrestling related, but certainly canine related. Does anybody remember, not that we were even born, does anyone know the name of the RCA dog? The RCA dog had a name. Don't say
the one that was on the corner of the album, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
It's I got would. An unusual name, though. It's not a
J.A. probably will know it because he is the fountain of incredible information.
Come on, everybody in the chat. What was the RCA's dog?
I know Buster
name.
Brown's dog was
give him a second. There's that little bit of a delay.
Don't write. Don't say Spuds McKenzie because
no, no, that's a good. That's a good guess, though.
John doesn't know.
Something like that. It's some weird name.
Devil doesn't know. I doesn't remember it. No one's gone to the Google yet. I'm trying to be nice here. Wow.
I think it's a four-letter name that ends with an A.
Did it have a name though? Did it?
It did. Yes.
Wow.
I think I know it. I'm pretty sure I know it. That's a hell of a thing. Me to ask a question and not know.
Somebody's gonna go to Wikipedia find it.
I'm gonna wait and see.
Really quick.
What was the name?
If we have, we know what we need in our sound effects eventually. Bruce, I don't know if it's a copyright infringement, but Jeopardy, the theme,
I already
the final Jeopardy theme.
I got
Nipper. Yes, need there a P in there, Jason there Moaning. Congratulations!
Nipper. What is it?
The extra P, Nipper.
Nipper.
Like he nips
no,
you.
Really?
Nipper. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, yeah. I just looked it up. The RCA dog, our famous Nipper. There you go. He was known as the RCA Victor dog from Bristol, England. Who served as a model for the 1898 painting by British painter Francois Barrault, titled His Master's Voice. Unbelievable. I never knew that. Learn something new every day. Imagine that.
Wow. My late father used to always ask me that question. Then he'd give me the answer, then I'd always forget it. And I would, you know. Oh. But yeah, I always think of him when I think of that.
Bill Myers and Victor, RCA Victor. No, not surprised.
Not a bad guess, though. That's good a guess, logical guess.
Nobody guessed Spuds McKenzie. I'm shocked.
Another thing, another creature of the 80s, good old Spuds.
There you go.
All right, quick. Yeah, who is the Stroh's dog? We might have asked this before.
Stroh's dog.
The Stroh's beer.
Yep, I remember that.
Let's see if anyone in the chat knows.
Ten.
Two syllables.
Yep.
The owner would say, blank, two Stroh's, please, and the dog would bark, roof.
No relation to Van Halen.
Oh, they got it then, huh?
No, I'm just saying. No one's got.
Or P. Keaton, if you will.
Oh, there you go. Budweiser had a Dalmatian. No, this is the Stroh's dog.
Yeah. I just gave you the clue. Blank P. Keaton.
Oh yeah, that is, yeah. No one's getting that.
As in Michael J. Fox. Yeah. Nope.
Oh, for God's sakes, Alex the dog.
Alex the dog.
That's
Alex. Stroh's. Two Stroh's, please. Roof.
Jay Will says Pete. Unbelievable. All right, guys. What do we got going on? Let's go around the horn. Benny, what's going on? We got something cooking on Monday, don't we?
We got True Crime, and we're going to talk about the Son of Sam who terrorized New York City from 1976 until the summer of 77. Yeah, very, very interesting.
Nice. ESO, what are you doing? You still got your Venmo opened up? You still taking money?
Hey, donations for Thursday night. And we're just waiting. We got another fun one coming up this week.
Yep, there you go. I love that. I'm digging the fan question. Got a lot of good feedback on that. I love the fan question. So that'd be neat. Phil, what's on your agenda?
Got a good full day of work tomorrow, hockey game tomorrow night, lying low Sunday, little workout, and then getting ready for True Crime Monday.
How about those Bruins? Almost blew a full goal lead last night.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
they
pulled
it out, though.
But I know. They needed to.
Yeah. First regulation win in like 2 weeks.
Yep.
Unbelievable. All right, folks. That's going to do it for us, for everybody here on the panel. I want to wish everybody a happy Friday. Thank you so much for tuning in live and on the replay and for joining the chat. With comments and suggestions are always greatly appreciated. Guys, you guys have a good one. Take care.
See you later.
What a day.